from some different regions that I could make them all and made my choice. What we call market research. Yeah, that's going to be logical. So you choose the one which suits you. Yeah, it was not just one moment. These are things which grow on you over many weeks, many months. And you do listen to people in your time school who haven't made much sense to me. You could ask people questions they didn't know about their religion. They didn't know about other people's. So the only way to find out what the other religions were is to ask people those religions are these skeptical people by them. And that was given much more accurate. That can be a much more accurate description of what was available. Okay, here we go. Okay. Please, yeah.
Well, hello, testing, 1, 2. Can you guys hear me? Yes?
Yes.
Yep. How's everyone today? Good? Yeah.
Alright, then I just put this thing back.
Alright. Welcome to the Success Without Stress, and thank you everyone for turning up. And today we have our Venerable Ajahn Brown, from Spiritual Director from the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And I'd like to thank you for spending your time with us. And I have to thank the organizing committee, a group of students from Curtin University, and as well as I would like to thank the Curtin Multi-Faith Services Department, and of course all of you who turned out for this event. A brief info, before I start the background information about the speaker, just I'm doing some housekeeping. So in case of any emergency, if let's say the fire alarm is been triggered, there are four emergency exits in this building, two at the back, right there, and two down here. So if let's say the fire alarm has been triggered, so no panic, we just move safely out of this building. So, yep, and the second reminder is, hope that you can switch your phone to silent mode. Yep, to ensure a smooth session, one hour, 15 minutes session. So, okay. So a bit background information about the speaker, Venerable Ajahn Brown. He was born in London in the year of 1951, and brought up in London, of course, and then he won a scholarship to study theoretical physics at the Cambridge University back in England. And after his tertiary studies, he taught in a school for 1 year, and after that he ordained as a Buddhist monk in Thailand in the early of 1970s. So currently, Venerable Ajahn Brown is a spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And for information, Ajahn Brown is one of our Curtin medalists. He won a John Curtin medal in the year of 2004. And he also given a number of talks on stress management as well as other Buddhist related talks. So without any further ado, I hand the floor over to Ajahn Brown. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, please save the clapping till afterwards, or I hope there'll be more of it. And today I'm invited to talk about stress. So just chill out for a few moments while I get this all organized. That sounds pretty cool. My cycle. Okay. That sounds really good.
Okay. So the first thing is, when anything goes wrong in life, Don't stress out. Instead, just laugh at life. Because it's so true that sometimes people panic too much. If there is a fire in here, just remember, you're going to die anyway. You get a free cremation, which means your family don't have to pay anything. And also, they probably make some money out of your death if you get insurance out. So it'd be a wonderful, compassionate thing to do, to sit in here if it's on fire. And also, if you do die in a fire here, it means you don't have to worry about your exams coming up soon. So you win many, many ways. So whatever happens in life, the thing is, never need to stress out at all. I do go traveling around the world teaching, and one of the problems which I have is I'm always going in aircraft. And so much so, this is no exaggeration, that people at Perth Airport, they know me. When I come back again, the customer's saying, "You again." And it's true. And some of the people who really care about me say, "You shouldn't go traveling in aircraft so much. There are terrorists in our modern world, and they would love to do nothing better than to blow up an aircraft. And the more you travel, this probability, the more chance that you'll be in an aircraft in which there's a bomb." But am I worried? Not at all. Because a long time ago, I worked out the three benefits of dying in an aircraft explosion at 35,000 feet. And the benefit number one is, as I just mentioned, an instant cremation. It's done on the spot. If any of you have ever organized a funeral for your loved ones, it's a pain in the neck. It takes so much time getting all the relations from overseas, taking time off, deciding on the coffin, the flowers, the place. It really is a lot of stress. But if you die in an aircraft explosion at 35,000 feet, it's not only done immediately, but you'll get your ashes scattered wherever you want. It goes all over the world. So that's the first advantage, instant cremation and automatic scattering of the ashes. Number two, if you've ever organized a funeral service, how much does it cost? It's several thousands of dollars to do a cremation or a burial for somebody. 35,000 feet. It's not, it doesn't cost you anything. It's better than that. You get insurance payout from the aircraft company. Your family actually makes money out of your death. And the third benefit is the best of all. If you die at 35,000 feet, you are so close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. So if ever I see a terrorist on the aircraft, I say, "Yes! Bring it on." So the point of this whole story, okay, I'm messing around a lot, is learning not how to worry by always realizing whatever happens, it will be okay. It doesn't matter so much. Because we worry about things so much, we miss enjoying our life. And many of you got exams coming soon. Look, if you pass your examination, you're going to get another one next year. If you fail this one, then you're free. And this is true, because if you keep on passing the examinations, there's no end to them. Yeah, you get your bachelor's degree, then you do another year to get honours, and then you have to do masters and then a PhD or whatever it is. So quit while you're ahead. So if you fail, it's wonderful. If you succeed, it's wonderful. Even Albert Einstein, he failed. He didn't pass his university degree. Steve Jobs, he left university, didn't finish. You see, so if you really want to make something out of your life, instead of me, shut up, Ajahn. He's the mothers with their kids at curtain. But look, the main thing is this. This is one of the key stories. It's actually, I should do this as an advertisement, the title of my new book coming out in about a week's time. It's called Good, Bad, Who knows? And this is a story of many years ago. There was a king who loved going hunting with a big entourage. And one day, while he was hunting, he cut his finger and called in the doctor who was on the hunt with him. "I've cut my finger. Take a look." And the doctor looked at his finger and just put a band-aid on it. And the king said, "Is that going to be okay?" You know what the doctor said? "I don't know. Good, bad, who knows?" Now that's not reassuring if you go to see your doctor and you say, "I've got a lump on my breast, I've got cancer, I've got swine flu." And all he says to you, "Good, bad, who knows?" But nevertheless, the king was more interested in the hunt. So carried on hunting, and when he got back to the palace, he had to call the doctor to him again, because the finger was now swollen. It was infected. So the doctor took off the band-aid, cleaned up the wound, and put a proper bandage on it. And after doing that simple procedure, the king asked again, "Is my finger going to be okay now?" And for a second time, the doctor said, "Good, bad, who knows?" And a few days later, that finger was so infected, the doctor had no choice but to amputate it. And the king was not happy at all. Indeed, the king, without any trial, threw the doctor into the dungeons and locked the cell door himself. "You stupid doctor, you incompetent man, I've lost my finger because of you. Now what do you think about being in jail?" And the doctor behind the bars said to the king, "Your Majesty, being in jail? Good, bad, who knows?" That's one dumb doctor, you might think. But a few weeks later, when the finger was healed enough, the king was off hunting again. And as he was hunting, he was chasing some animal in the forest. He was running so hard on his horse, he got separated from the rest of his party. He got totally lost in the forest. And being lost and alone, not knowing where he was going, he got captured by the indigenous tribe who lived deep in the jungle. Because this happened to be a full moon night. It was one of the holiest days of their year. And according to their customs, on that day, they would always do a sacrifice. Usually an animal sacrifice. But today, they could do a human sacrifice. Not just an ordinary human sacrifice, but a king, royalty. Imagine if someone captured Prince Harry, who was here yesterday. But they thought this was really good luck to make such a high offering to their god. So they took the king into the clearing in the jungle. They tied him to a tree and they started their ceremonies. They're dancing and banging, and they got to their crescendo when the priest got out the knife, the sacred knife, and was about to cut the king's throat, until one person said, "Stop, stop! We can't sacrifice that man. He's not perfect. He's only got 9 fingers. And we can't make such a sacrifice, an imperfect sacrifice to our holy God. That will bring us bad luck. Just like any of you who bring food to the monks. It has to be nice food, okay? Bad food is bad luck. It has to be perfect for a sacrifice." So they all noticed, yeah, it's true. The king had lost one finger. So they had no choice but to release him and let him go home. And as he was finding his way home back to the palace, he realized losing a finger had actually saved his life. He thought it was a bad thing, but it turned out to be a good thing. So when he went back to the palace, the first thing he did was to go to the dungeons and to release the doctor and to apologize to him, saying, "Doctor, I'm terribly sorry. I thought you were stupid when you said losing a finger was good, bad, who knows. But it turned out to be the best thing of all. It saved my life. I'm sorry, you were right. But, said the king, it was a bad thing I did, putting you in jail. What do you mean, said the doctor, a bad thing? It was a good thing you put me in jail. If I had been in jail, I would have been with you on that hunt. I'd have been captured, and I've got 10 fingers. So you see the moral of that story. At the time, we think losing a finger is a bad thing. But it turns out, actually, to be a good thing. Steve Jobs getting kicked out of university. Was that good, bad? Who knows? It was good in the end. So whatever happens in life, you don't need to worry so much. Whatever happens, always remember that. Good, bad, who knows? Then you find you don't stress out so much. You know, whatever works in life, whatever happens, sometimes it always works out unexpectedly to the far better. I remember one of my friends in Jakarta. When he was working at his job, his boss called him into the office. Now, if you think you've got a bad boss or really hard parents, listen to this guy. This really is the boss from hell. Because this boss called him into the office and said, I want you to resign. He said, what for? I've done nothing wrong. Resign. He said, no. So this boss opened up the drawer in his desk and took out a loaded revolver and put it to his head. It's a true story. Resign or I'll shoot you. And he meant it. Now that is not recommended business management in Curtin University. But he had no choice. He had to sign the resignation paper at the point of a gun. And he went home thinking his career was finished. He had a wife, 2 young kids, a big mortgage. He thought he was finished. But after just worrying for a day or two, he got his act together. And he thought, I've made so many contacts, why don't I start my own business in competition with this boss, which he did. And he's been very successful. He's now multi-millionaire. And he said at the time he thought this was the worst thing which ever happened to him in his life, being forced to resign with so many debts. But actually, it's what spurred him into becoming the man he is today. So whatever happens to you in life, remember that. I remember once, many times I had girlfriends when I was young. Not now, I'm a monk now, I'm a good monk. But in those days, I remember I had one girl, I had a relationship with her for about 6 months. It's very, very close. Maybe, you know, we could have committed, we're thinking about it. But then she found another guy. And she dumped me. If I saw her today, thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. At the time I thought it was bad, but it turned out to be the best thing which ever happened to me. Otherwise I'd never become a monk. So this is not needed to worry because you don't know what's happening. So all of you are going to interviews, going to do exams. Please remember that. Good, bad, who knows. Whatever happens, you make something of it. It's not that important. And then you realize it's not what happens to you in life which is the key to success, but how you deal with whatever happens to you in life. Even difficult moments, if you have good attitude, if you're wise, it turns out to be success, 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 all the time, no matter what happens. And so you're having some exams, some of you, soon, and I always love telling this story about how to be successful without seeing no stress at all. I told this story about this time last year at Carmel School, the Jewish school, over in Dianella. And in January I got a letter back from the chaplain there. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. The class to which you taught this has done better than ever before in the Year 12 exams. Thank you so much. You taught us how to relax without stress before the exams. And it's such an easy thing to do. This is how I passed my final exams at Cambridge in theoretical physics. Now, you may think that your exams are tough. These were really tough. We had a three-hour paper in the morning, started Monday morning, an hour for lunch, another three-hour paper in the afternoon, the same on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday as well. 6 days in a row. And this was final examinations. Everything you had done the previous 2.5 years to 3 years in UK counted for absolutely nothing. Zip, zero. You got a degree or you failed on one series of exams. So this was high pressure. Especially because my parents, my friends, they all said this was really important. Pass your degree at a university like Cambridge. You pass that and you're set for life. And so I work really hard. I often think now, if only I had known I was going to become a monk, I wouldn't have studied so much. We didn't know that at the time. We don't know what's going to happen in life. So I worked very hard. But I knew how to let go of stress. I had 1 hour for lunch in those 6 days. I never had lunch. I went back to my room, sat down, and just meditated for half an hour. A very simple meditation, nothing complicated. I sat down and just tried to relax. And the first thing I noticed in my mind, in order to deal with stress, you have to be aware of what's going on inside. The first thing I noticed was I was thinking about the morning exam. How had I done? Had I answered the questions correctly with enough explanation? Now, you all know that in life, once the exam is in with the examiner, you can't change it. It's too late. So why the hell do people keep thinking about it once it's already in? I'll tell you why, because you're stupid, that's why. So look, I had learned how to let go of the past. The past was finished. You can't change it. Why do you keep bringing it up? Especially when it just tires you and makes you more stressed out. So because I trained to let go of the past, the morning exam faded away very quickly. Whatever happened, good or bad, who knows, it's done, finished. The next thing which came up into my mind was the afternoon exam. I started worrying about the examination I was going to take in another half an hour. And I realized that is not the wise thing to do. Now I needed to rest my mind. If you're just playing football, during the break you don't kick a ball around, you sit down, you relax, you get a massage or something, you prepare yourself for the afternoon, for the next stage. Worrying about the future was just destroying my rest. So I realized the best thing I could do for the future was to look after the present moment. To relax right now. And that is a great teaching for your life. Where is your future, which you stress out at, where is your future being made? It's right now. When is the only time you can do anything about your future? It's right now. Right here, you are building your future. And I realized the success of that afternoon examination depended on how I was preparing my brain right now. Understanding that meant I could not stop worrying about the future and put more attention into this present moment just to be here. And straight away, two heavy burdens of the past and the future were taken away from me. Those are the main things we stress out at, the past and the future. When you let those two go, you're right here. With the confidence you're doing the very, very best you can possibly do by being here, relaxing and resting. And then, as soon as I started relaxing and resting by not worrying about the future and the past, once I actually came here and I was aware of what was going on now, I was shocked that my body was shaking. I never thought of myself as a nervous person, but this was high stakes examinations, and it's natural to be nervous at such a time, but I never realized how nervous I was. If you're shaking, you soon get physically exhausted. But as soon as I noticed what was going on, I could calm it down and become relaxed physically. A lot of times, because we don't notice what's going on, we don't notice how we're stressing ourselves out and tiring ourselves. And that's the reason why we experience stress and don't have any success at all. So I could relax my body until my body became very still. And the next thing I noticed, even deeper than that, was how tired my brain was. Remember, I just performed a 3-hour high intensity intellectual exercise of doing the examination in theoretical physics. That was very tough, and my brain was tired. And this actually made me very aware of the core reason why we're stressed out. You are all so tired. And you don't realize it because you're so busy doing something else. And as soon as I saw how tired I was inside, I could just relax, 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 until all the energy came back into my brain. So half an hour of relaxation was all it took. And afterwards I went into the afternoon examination, totally relaxed and re-energized. I was clear, which was why I did very well. In fact, my friends told me afterwards, and this was true, I'm not making these things up, I was the only student who went into the afternoon examinations with a smile on their face. I was relaxed. That's why you did very well. And I told that story to the students at Carmel School. That's why they did so well. They learn how to prepare their brain before they do an important examination. Don't go putting more information in. Prepare the brain. That's what's going to have to do all the work. You know enough already. Now learn how to relax. And then you become far more efficient. This is the simile which I give to many people about how to learn with stress. I've given it here in Curtin many times before. The simile of how heavy is the, this is a cup of tea. I gave this simile I live a very weird and interesting life as a Buddhist monk. If any of you want an interesting life, become a monk or a nun. Because I got invited to give the keynote address at the World Computer Conference in Brisbane a couple of years ago. I don't know anything about computers, but still I could give the keynote address. And it was so well received. It was written up in the Australian, in the IT section, and it's gone from there to Harvard Business School blog. I held up a cup of water, a cup of tea, and I said, how heavy is this container of tea? The longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. After 1 minute, it starts to feel pretty heavy. After 2 minutes, my arm aches. After 3 minutes, I'm in pain and a very stupid monk. What should I do when it starts to get too heavy to hold comfortably? You put it down. You don't throw it away. You don't give it away. Just put it down for a minute. If you don't believe me, you can try this at home. And after 1 minute, you pick it up again. It's actually lighter. It's exactly the same amount of tea in this cup. It's lighter because I have rested. And that is the secret for dealing with stress in life. Stress has got nothing to do with how much responsibility, business, how much work you have to do. Nothing to do with that at all. Everything to do with not knowing how to put it down when it becomes a bit too heavy to bear. And a lot of people say, I haven't got time to put it down, I've got too much to do. If there's so much work you have to do, then you have to put it down. Because if you put down your work, whether it's in the faculty at this university, or as a student, whatever you do, learning to put things down for, say, quarter of an hour, half an hour, is called by Harvard an investment in the future. Now, business classes, I'd like to call things investments, because half an hour of rest and relaxation, you make that up later with greater efficiency. Your brain can work at a much higher level. You get, say, 3 hours work done in 2.5 of much better quality. How many of you, if you're a student working on an assignment, and it's really late at night, and you're just looking at that screen, and you're not producing at all? Your mind is just too tired. If you do produce anything, it's rubbish. You do much better to relax. And once your brain has got its energy back, you go back to the screen, you can actually write something which is interesting and maybe unique. Simply because now your brain can work to a much higher efficiency. The problem with our modern workforce is that we don't realize how to use our brains. We want to be more productive, but we can't do that because in the afternoon, people are so tired, their output goes down. Their quality is not that good. They haven't rested. So Harvard was encouraging people on Wall Street, take half an hour during the middle of the day, doesn't matter what you do, but just get away. And that half an hour is not time wasted, but time invested. You make it up in the afternoon with greater efficiency and no stress. Main reason people are stressed again, they worry so much. They worry about the past as well. The past, what's happened? Please don't burden yourself. Haven't you got enough things to think about? But don't worry at all. There was once when I was a young monk in Thailand. We were building our main hall. And in those days we didn't have earth movers. Actually, monks like me were the earth movers. We'd shovel dirt into wheelbarrows and wheelbarrow it around the place. When our teacher asked us, we need to move this huge pile of earth from one place to another. I thought, yeah, I can understand that. And I had faith. I wanted to do something good. And this was really hard work for 3 hours in the mosquito-ridden hot jungles of northeast Thailand, where the mosquitoes were about the size like this. And when they sucked the blood, you could hear the slurp as the blood disappeared from your body. Now, that is a bit of an exaggeration, but not that much. They were big mosquitoes, and there were hundreds of them. And you were working out there. In those days, we only had one meal a day, which we finished by about 9:30. From 9:30, without a break, we worked until about 10. Slave labor. But 3 days, that's what it was. And after 3 days, we finished it, and I thought, great. The next day, I can have a rest, do some meditation, wash my robes. But that night, our teacher went to another monastery. And the deputy abbot, he called all the monks together after our meal about 9 o'clock and said, I think you put the earth in the wrong place. We're going to have to move it. So another 3 days of pushing wheelbarrows in the steaming mosquito-ridden jungles of northeast Thailand. That was tough work. Dirty, dehydrated, exhausted, but I had faith. Another 3 days, we were finished. At last, the next day, I could have a shower, have a rest. I feel so dirty. But that night, our teacher came back. And the following day, you guessed it, he said, what do you put it over there for? I told you to put it over here. Move it. And that was the time I lost my faith. These stupid teachers, you know, like your parents or your lecturers, they always tell you what to do. They don't have to do it themselves. You know, you have to do it. I wouldn't mind it if they pushed a wheelbarrow too, but I had to push these stupid wheelbarrows. And I never became a monk to learn how to push wheelbarrows. I could do that here for some money. This was exploitation. This was not right. I'm going to complain to the Human Rights Commission. This is exploitation. This is not fair. And I was very angry. I was so angry. And there's a Thai boy over here. I was so angry I started swearing. In English, that was. So the Thai monks couldn't understand. And I was very upset. Now, even though the other monks were all Thai-speaking, couldn't understand English, they saw I was very upset. They could see you're angry. Then one of them came up to me and said something very wonderful. He said, "Pushing a wheelbarrow is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part." And straight away that hit me very deeply. It was so true. Pushing a wheelbarrow is very easy. Thinking about it, complaining about it, that's the hard part. And so I stopped thinking, I stopped complaining, just pushed it. And it was fun again. It didn't take that long, another 3 days it was finished. And thank God they were happy where we put the afterwards. But from that experience I learned a lot. Whatever you do in life, whether it's doing some examinations in a few weeks, whether it's going out with a beautiful boyfriend, whatever, it's going to ask somebody, would you like to go out with me? Whether it's going to an interview for a job, whether it's having some operation, for some cancer inside of yourself. Doing it is the easy part. Thinking about it is a difficult part. And once you realize that, you understand again the cause of stress. Just do it, stop thinking about it. And then it's hardly any worry or stress at all. Because we think so much about these things, that is why we get worried and we stress out. A lot of times it just... And anyway, whatever you think it's going to be, we always imagine what's going to happen. And how many times have you noticed, whatever you imagine it's going to be, it always turns out to be something different. Now that's one of the great sayings of the Buddha which inspired me. Now because I'm a Buddhist monk, this is basically about stress, not about religion. But one of the great sayings of the Buddha, which really impressed me, was whatever you think it's going to be, it will always be something else. What a wonderful teaching that is. You have all these dreams about what it might be like to go on holiday somewhere. It's something completely different when you get out there. Getting married, getting a job, whatever else in life, you imagine it's going to be one thing. But life is always different than what you expect. That's a wonderful thing about life. It is just a journey of the unexpected. And if you could predict it, and if you knew what was going to happen, where would be the meaning in life? There'd be no joy, no adventure, nothing to it at all. And when you know you can't expect it, you can't predict it, then it's a waste of time worrying about it. You simply don't know what's going to happen next. So it does become this beautiful adventure without any stress because you don't know what you're stressing out about. And that way you have a beautiful time in your life, living very peacefully. And also you learn just one of the greatest causes of stress. I got this, I was suspecting this for many years, but a few years ago I did a day-long seminar with a whole group of youth, maybe 200 or 300 youth in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. And as part of the sessions we asked everybody, these were about 15 to 25 year olds, we asked everybody, what is your biggest emotional problem in life? And we didn't really understand or expect what was going to come up. But by far the biggest problem they had, this was in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, the biggest problem they said was tiredness. This is even young people. And I think you can all recognize that. Human beings today are all very, very tired. You go to bed at night and you don't sleep very well. And poor young people, you go to bed at night pretty late after doing your assignment and your mother wakes you up far too early. Instead of letting you sleep. Let them sleep in, for goodness sake. They need their rest. They're tired. And because you don't sleep well, that is why people get very, number one, stressed out, grumpy. That's where most anger comes from, especially any of you in the workforce. Most office grumpiness, anger, whatever, comes because people are just far too tired. And it's also, many health problems come from that as well, because we don't know how to rest, especially when we go to bed at night. So when you go to bed at night, this is the secret of sleeping. Sleeping is a way, sleeping well, to overcome stress and have success in life. So I'm now going to teach you how to sleep. Many people tell me that before they go to bed at night, they listen to one of my talks, and that sends them to sleep. I don't know whether to take that as a compliment or as a criticism. But it is true that if you can learn how to sleep, and the way to learn how to sleep well at night is pretty much what I said about a little bit of relaxation. Please, when you go to sleep at night, do not take your past or your future into bed with you. Just like how many people sleep with their shoes on in bed? You take them off. So your left shoe is like your past. Your right shoe is your future. Do not take them into bed with you, for goodness sake. Let them outside. You don't take them under the covers. So whatever happened to you today, leave it outside your bed. You don't care what happened. This is a time you need to relax and rest. Whatever you're going to face in the future, good, bad, who knows, and it's going to be totally unexpected. There's no way you can know. I like telling people the story that I learned this when I was very young. I was only about 7 or 8 years of age. Had to go to the dentist. Now this was about 50 years ago. If you're scared of dentists these days, imagine the dentist 50 years ago. This was like going to Guantanamo Bay. This was like going to some underground torture chamber in some third world dictatorship. Even the drills, those of you my age, know how they sounded. They just really just, they gave you the creeps before you even went in to see them there. And the drills were all blunt. They don't have these high-tech ones these days. And so, and if they did inject you, have you seen the needles these days? They're just so tiny. You go to the museum and see the needles they used to use in the old days. That was spooky. You'd like to run away. That really hurt in those days. And when my mummy told me, "Darling, you have to go to the dentist tomorrow," I said, "No way. I'm not going there." "You have to." "I don't want to go." "But you must." "No." And I was screaming, and she put me to bed, and I was crying in bed all night, not all night, but a lot of the night. When I went up in the morning, I thought, how can I get out of this? I'm sick. "No, you're not sick." "Mummy, you don't love me." "Yes, I do love you. Well, why would you send me to be tortured?" And my mother dragged me to that surgery. Again, kicking and screaming all the way. I was so upset and so worried. And I remember this because when we got to the dentist surgery, it was only then I found my appointment had been cancelled. The dentist was sick. We didn't have SMSs those days, couldn't get an email. Okay, so I learned from that, all that worry. No, hours and hours of worry was for absolutely nothing. And I realized, why are you killing yourself like that? So because of that, the future is totally unexpected, uncertain. So why worry about it? You don't know what's going to happen next. Even people dying. This last week, if any of you are sick and are Buddhists and you want to, you know, you want to get some chanting from the monks, please don't ask me. Because this last week, there were 3 people on their deathbeds. They were dying. The family all ready to let them go. And they asked me to do some chanting for them. Now the 3 of them are out of hospital. And they're very upset at me. So, but we're ready to let them go. We didn't want the chanting to get them to live again. We wanted the chanting to die peacefully. You gave us the wrong chanting. We don't know what's going to happen, ever. People are about to die, they live again. People are living, they just pass out and die in front of you. You don't know. So the point is, you don't know what's going to happen next. So it doesn't bear worth worrying about. My saying, to lessen stress, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. You know, that's very, very true. And it's very profound. Think of that. Never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. One day you're going to die. It could be tonight. And imagine doing all that hard work for nothing when you could be enjoying yourself. Okay, how are we going to go? Okay, the last little story of how to lessen stress. This is for all of you who've got a home or a business. Like, I've got a business. I'm in the monk business. Not the monkey business, the monk business. And I've got a big monastery down at Serpentine. And you've got a center in Nolimara. You know, for many years, I was working so hard. 5 days, Monday to Friday, down in the monastery in Serpentine. And on the weekends, I go to Nolimara Center and work there 7 days a week. When I go back to monastery, all the people visiting would say, "Oh, you live in such a peaceful monastery. It's so beautiful there." And I would think, "What the hell are you talking about? There's so much work to be done." And I realized there was something wrong, and it was with me. So I decided from that time on that once a week I would spend time in the place where I lived, in my monastery, as a visitor, not as an owner. I'd pretend to be a visitor. Even though I was the abbot, the boss monk, I was going to be a visitor. When I was a visitor, I didn't have to sweep all the paths. I didn't have to fix up anything. When people came with the problems, "No, go and talk to another monk, I'm just a visitor." And then I could see how beautiful the place where I lived was and how peaceful it was. I could see it through your eyes. And from that, I've advised people, when you go home, pretend for 2 hours every week to be a visitor in the home in which you live. So you see, all the dishes needed washing in the sink. Not my problem, I'm only a visitor. When you go to somebody else's house, do you wash their dishes for them? Of course you don't. When you go into their garden and the weeds are taking over and the grass is really high, if someone else is home, you don't mow their lawn for them, do you? It's not your problem, you're just a visitor. So you go home, dishes all over the place a mess, the garden needing mowing. Not my problem, I'm just a visitor. And then you can relax. Or those of you working in this university, why not go into your physics lab as a visitor instead of as an owner? And then, because Mario's at the back over there. Hi, Mario. He's in the physics department. Then you can actually appreciate just how beautiful it is and how wonderful it is. And it's peaceful. But if you're always an owner, there's always things to be done, problems to be solved. You never have any rest at all in your life. So that's just a general principle. Please spend time in your life being a visitor to life, not as an owner. So you can relax and enjoy your time. I'm a visitor to this university. I don't own the place. I've got no responsibilities here. So I can really enjoy it. Can you? Or are you a student here? Are you an owner? Are you a lecturer? So that's a wonderful way of learning how to relax. So please try that in when you go home. Wherever you work, you live, spend a couple of hours every week as a visitor, not as an owner. And then you can appreciate how beautiful the place you live is. And you can relax and let go of all of your stress. There we go. That's 1 hour has gone already. I didn't know what I was going to talk about, but I guarantee I didn't stress about it. Thank you for listening. Okay, any questions, comments or complaints? Any questions, anybody? Comments? Yeah, okay, to get the first question, I have to tell this every year I come here. This is basic Buddhism. You know that Buddhists believe in karma and reincarnation. This is actually from the teachings of the Buddha, the ancient sutras. There was once a man came up to see the Buddha and said to him, why is it that some people are wealthy and other people are poor? Even though you work very hard, sometimes so difficult to make ends meet and have enough money. Other people, they get on the computer and they invest or they play poker and they just make millions. There must be some reason, some karmic reason, why some people are wealthy and some people are poor. So the Buddha said, now because of some things you did in the past, that's why you're wealthy in this life. And other people, they didn't do those things, therefore they had to be poor in this life, no matter how hard you work. It was such a good answer, the guy asked another question. He said, why is it that some people are beautiful while other people are ugly? What karma did they do in the past to be ugly in this life? Now you may have noticed when I mentioned the word ugly, I looked down at the floor. The reason was that I gave this simile once in Singapore. I just happened, just by chance, to be looking at one woman when I mentioned the word ugly. And my goodness, she complained. Why did you mention the word ugly when you were looking at me? So now I always look at the ground. So he gave a good answer. And then the third question was the most important. He said, why is it that some people are really intelligent while other people are stupid? Even in this university, you may know some of these people, they hardly ever go to lectures, they don't do much work, they always get straight A's, you know, they always get the prizes, they're just so brilliant, they don't have to do any work. It really sucks when you have to work so hard. But, why are some people intelligent, other people are stupid? The Buddha gave the cause. He said, the reason why you're stupid in your next life is because you do not ask questions in this life. That's a karmic cause of stupidity in your next life. And that's what the Buddha said. Any questions? Yes, I always get a question. Thank you. As a Buddhist monk, okay, I just was mentioning to the gentleman in front of me earlier, when I was about 16, I realized that spirituality instead of religion was really important in life. You know, you needed a meaning. You wanted to find out something about why we're here, what we're supposed to be doing. And instead of, I did ask a couple of religious people, but I never really got a satisfactory answer. So what I did, I went to the bookshop and I got books on all the major religions and read them all from front to back until I found out what spirituality, what religion suited me. I call that these days market research. And to me, Buddhism made the most sense. So that's where I really started getting into Buddhism. But not as a theory. I mentioned earlier just doing something like final examinations at Cambridge, just the meditation. It was really effective. I mean, big time effective. And how many other things which I learned how to do really enhanced my life. Because instead of believing in something outside of yourself, one of the most important parts of the Buddhist spirituality was being aware of what's going on inside of you. And nowadays, you know, mindfulness. I mean, there's mindfulness training here in Curtin University now. That's right down the middle of the line Buddhist. We started that. Except for last November, I gave a lecture in Toronto University. It was part of a course on Buddhism, medicine, and psychology. A course in the medical department. It was very successful. This year, it's moved to McGill University. And I started by this one professor. And they wanted some input from the Buddhists. And because they realized in things like medicine and psychology, Buddhism is having a huge input. Not a small bit, a huge input. Because we now understand more than anyone else about how the mind works and how it interacts with the body. Because that's our meditation, that's our life. We're the experts. So one thing I did point out, that the mindfulness was not enough. So I invented a new word, which is now in the Urban Dictionary, kindfulness. adding a little bit of kindness to the mindfulness, and that is very potent. And that is cutting-edge psychology in the West. So I found out these teachings, they weren't just something you did on a Sunday or whatever your religious day was. It was something which actually enhanced your life and made you more successful, more healthy, more happy. The things which you wanted in life were actually coming from this. And it was not promising something in a future existence, which you, couldn't really be sure of. It was giving you benefits right now. Big ones. So that's actually how I got into the spirituality of it. Does that make sense? Yeah, thank you. Well, that's a cause of stress. We're just so great doers. We're always doing something. That's why I say it's very rare these days to find a human being. All we ever find is a human going. You're going somewhere, you're never being here. Which means you're missing out on life. How many times do people say, gee, a year has gone since I was last here? Time flies, you meet sort of somebody you haven't seen for a few years. Why, you've grown so much. Where have you been when that year has gone past? You've always been going somewhere else. Always busy, always doing things. That's why it's very hard to find a human being. We're a human doing something, a human going somewhere, but never really being here. I remember once I got caught out once in our city centre. One of the people there, I was taking some papers into the office. He said, how are you doing, Ajahn Brahm? And I gave the reply, please never say this reply, I'm getting there. Because he asked me, where are you getting to? And I said, okay, it's one of three places. Karakata, Fremantle, Pinneroo. That's where I'm going. Those are the three cemeteries. That's where you're getting to. So these days when people say, how are you doing? I say, I'm being here. I'm not getting there. I'm being here. Enjoying the journey. Because please, enjoy yourself while you're occurring. Be here. Don't sort of think, oh, I want to get the exams over, then I'll be happy. Now that's one of the things which I saw when I was a student. In England, we did O-levels at 15 or 16. So at that time, I loved playing soccer with my friends. And my parents said, look, don't spend all the evening playing soccer. Stay at home, do your homework, study, because if you pass your O-level examinations, then you'll be happy. You get some foundation in life. I followed their advice. Stopped playing soccer, did my homework, did very well, passed my O-levels. What happened next, as I say, there's always another exam afterwards. The only time you'll ever stop is when you fail. So I passed, so then I had to do A-levels. And again, that time I wasn't chasing football, so I was chasing girls. And my parents said, no, stop going out, stay at home. Do your homework, study, because if you pass your A-levels, then you'll do well, you'll be happy. I mean, I followed that, and of course, more examinations at university. But then it was really serious, because imagine, work hard, study hard, pass your degree, and when you pass your degree, then you'll be happy. And at that time, that was when I started getting suspicious. Because I'd seen other people who passed their degrees. Were they happy? They weren't. They were doing some honours or PhDs or something, working their butts off. Those people who had left to get a job, they were really working hard, saving up for a car or getting married or looking at, when I find the perfect boy, then I'll be happy. When I find the girl who's meant for me, then I'll be happy. That's what people think, you know. And then they find a girl, get married. Are they happy? You know the three rings of marriage? The first ring of marriage, engagement, second ring of marriage, third ring of marriage, suffering, yes. So now when we get married, then we'll be happy. It's difficult being married. But then what happens? You have kids. Or you think, when you're married, you're going to have to get an apartment or a house. And you think, when I pay off the mortgage, then we'll be free, we'll be happy. We can go wherever we want. Then you have kids, and then it's when the kids grow up, when they finish university, get married, then we're free of them. Then we can go cruises and go around the world, then we'll be happy. By that time, you're getting close to retirement. And people think, when I retire, then I'll be happy. They plan for their retirement. What happens when they retire? Have you ever noticed that most people who go to churches, temples, are old people? You know why? Because they think, if I go to the temple or church, when I die, then I'll be happy. It's always happiness. Once I get this done and finished, then I'll be happy. Once I get this exam out of the way, then I'll be happy. Haven't you got suspicious yet? It's not passing the exam makes you happy. It's how you do the exam makes you happy. It's how you prepare for the exam makes you happy. It's not what you do, but it's always how you do it in life. That's what makes you happy. Whether it's pushing the wheelbarrows or just laying on the beach in Bali, it's how you do it makes you happy. So please remember, it's not what you do in life. Whether you're a professor, whether you're a student, whether you've got a lot of work to do or hardly any work to do, it's how you approach that. What you do with what you've got is the secret of happiness. So please be here. And don't ever think, once I get this out of the way, then I'll be happy. Otherwise you'll be dead before you're happy. When is the only place in Perth you see anybody with the letters R.I.P. after their name? Rest in peace. It's in cemeteries, isn't it? Isn't it a bit of a late to rest in peace now? Then I say rest in peace now. When you can enjoy it. So remember, please remember, I'm going to try and be a human being, not a human going. Okay. Yeah, you got a question over there? Sorry, when you're in Tamale? I don't understand the question. Okay. Always in the, if you can, in the present moment. Obviously you have to make plans, but we make too many plans in life. And so, many of you know me, I never plan a talk, never know what I'm going to speak about. Just let it happen, and it's usually far more interesting for everybody. Now, one of the worst things in this university, if people have got a lecture and they read it out, you get that from the notes. You know, they want someone actually to have some passion and to tell what they know about physics or about ecology or whatever else you're doing in life, to make it alive by not planning it. And number two is that, you know, when you do have that sort of happiness, you can actually spread happiness around. Have you ever been into a room and some really miserable, angry guy comes in and everybody feels this negative presence come into the room? It brings everybody down. If you're a happy, peaceful person, you actually do raise the happiness levels of others, whether you like it or not. So happy people spread happiness. Really good. Any other questions? What's the time going? It's 20 past 3. What time do we finish? Sorry? We've got another 10 minutes. There's another opportunity for a few more people to be intelligent in your next life. Thank you. Yes? In the back. Being and doing is sometimes we're always reacting to what happens in life. And always going. So this is what John Lennon said years ago. Life is what happens when you're busy planning something else. And isn't that most people's lives? You get up in the morning, you're planning what you're going to do today. During the day, you're planning what you're going to do in the evening. In the evening, you're planning what you're going to do next. Never actually be in here. You know one of the reasons why we do that is we're so afraid. We're so afraid what might happen if things go wrong. I learned this when I was a young man, that somebody told me this great little anecdote, that when you are, you know, from 15 to maybe 25, you're really concerned what other people think of you. You know, girls have to dress well, boys have to be cool, because what other people think of you is really important. Later on in life, in the 30s or 40s, you get what's called self-confidence. You know, you don't give a damn what other people think of you. You just do it anyway. And then finally, usually in your 60s, you finally find out that people weren't thinking about you anyway. If you could only learn that when you were young, you'd have a much happier life. But we're so concerned what other people think of us. Notice, I remember this, you know, when I was young, used to go to dances and parties, you see a nice girl, you go chatting to them, and you'd be so afraid what she thinks of you. I'm talking as a guy, okay? So afraid what she thinks of you. You try and say something and you get all garbled up, you get too nervous. So please, girls, when boys do that, give them a break. And it's the same girls as well. Then I found out when you get to know the girls, they say, we were so worried about what you thought of me. Look, the girl is not thinking about you when you go up to her. She's thinking about herself, how she comes across. And same with the boy. He's not thinking about you, he's thinking about himself. So a lot of times, we don't need to worry so much about what other people think of us. We don't need to be so afraid. Then we could just be ourselves. So please, don't try and put on a front or act some sort of role. Just be yourself. And it usually comes across as confidence. And confidence always becomes a very attractive quality. You're not playing around anymore. You're just who you are. And most people are very beautiful people. They're always very attractive in one way or another. So you don't try and have to be someone you're not. That is very unattractive. It comes across because of fear. And when we are afraid of what other people say about us, we tend to protect ourselves by planning all these things. We're afraid of life, which means we plan so much. A lot of times just let life evolve. Just see what happens next. It's an interesting journey. But when you're afraid, you're never really in life. You're always cowering in some corner away from life. So, be in life. You get hurt sometimes, but you have a lot of fun. Yeah. Oh, success. Success, I told this story just this afternoon at monastery. And I was mentioning in a little CV that I was a teacher at high school for 1 year. And I often tell people that teaching high school kids, no teenagers, would make anyone think of leaving the world and becoming a monk or a nun. No, they're not that bad. But I had to set an examination in mathematics, the end of the year exam. And I never set an exam before, so I had to, mid-year exam. I had to figure out how to set the exam, so I asked one of the school teachers, the senior teachers, how to do this. And they said, set the exam so the average score is around 70%. Because if you set it too difficult an exam, so the average score is about 20 or 30%, all of your students will lose their motivation. They will assume they cannot do maths, and they'll give up. And if you make the average score 90 or 100%, that would mean it's just too easy. There's no challenge there at all. So make it 70%. Try and aim for 70% score. Because if it's 70%, they will all be encouraged. Yes, they can do maths. 70% is a good score. And the 30% where they make mistakes, that's where me as their teacher could find out their weak points or they haven't understood. So I could address that in the next lesson. So it says 70% was the best mark for an examination. When they said that, I realized that was also with life as well. If you get 100% in life, that's not success. You never learn anything. There's no growth. There's no challenge. If you're one of these people who have life so easy that there's never anything ever goes wrong, you have fun, but you don't learn. If life is only 20 or 30%, it's so difficult, too many things go wrong, you do get depressed. And life is too difficult. But if you have 70%, that's the best score in life. That is success. You get motivated. Yes, you have happiness. But also, in the places where you so-called fail, where life is difficult, that is where you learn. That is success. And the story which goes along with that is I've had many people come to me who have been in very difficult situations in their life, suffered sexual abuse when they were kids, or had some other tragedies, and they come along and they call themselves damaged goods. And I say that because I live in a forest. I say, have a look in the trees in this forest. See if you can find one tree which hasn't got a branch missing, whose bark isn't scarred, whose leaves are all in the right place. If you find a tree like that, perfectly straight, with all the branches in place, no scars, all the leaves in place, that tree will be found in a plantation organized by the government. Is that beautiful? Would you like to go for a walk or a picnic in a plantation? Or would you prefer to go in a natural forest where all the trees are bent, crooked, branches hanging off, scarred, all damaged trees? They are the beautiful ones. So if you are damaged, you've had problems in your life, difficulties, you belong to the beautiful trees in the forest. Welcome. That is success. Being a damaged tree. Do you get it? So we have to change. Just a little bit of an understanding of what perfection is. And nature is a great teacher for us. Where would you like to go for a walk? Plantation or a natural forest? When you do go to a natural forest, try and find a perfect tree. You'll never find one. You'll only find beautiful ones. Now you know what success means. Okay, next question, or I've stunned you. How's the time? All right, 27. So, that's all for today, folks. Very good. Very good.
Hello. Thank you very much, Ajahn Brahm. And once again, probably give a round of applause to Ajahn Brahm again. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the beautiful teachings as well as the beautiful stories. Yep. I came across the wheelbarrow story as well as the coffee cup story like a few years back via YouTube. And then, it is very, both of them, they are really helpful in my life. And then it really works. Yeah. So other than that, besides bringing, I also hope that we can bring the cutting edge psychology method of kindfulness from the west to the south, where we are right now. Yep. And thank you very much to Ajahn Brahm. And I have some short announcement over here. For our information, if let's say you'd like to hear more on Ajahn Brahm's talk, you actually can YouTube it. Yep, a lot of series is on the internet. And if let's say you want to know more, to find out more, or come attend Ajahn Brahm's talk, please you can go online and look at this website called BS, Buddhist Society, BSWA.org.au. You can find get more information over there. And here's the last announcement. If let's say you're interested in meditation, we actually have a group, meditation group on campus, which we have a an hour session at, on campus every Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Okay, that's all for me. Thank you very much again for attending today's talk, Success Without Stress. I hope everyone walk out of this door, you can be happy and be well every time. Okay, thank you everyone. Before I forget, actually I took some photos over here. If let's say you don't want your photo being shared, can you please come down and I'll delete the photo in front of you? So yeah, thank you very much.
Final semester.
Final semester. Thesis to produce. So yeah, just give myself some rest.
Yeah, me too.
Going down to Serpentine for like.
So you are the one who organizes.
Organizer. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Amazing event.
No.
I mean, it's like,
do you always?
Yeah, every Friday. Yeah. I just started to miss. No.
I wish to go. Is it every Friday? What time?
Every Friday, 7 o'clock. They'll start a meditation session for like half an hour from 7 o'clock to 7:30.
Uh-huh.
And 7:30 to 9 o'clock.
It's just not. Yeah. Like every Friday?
Every Friday. But right now it's a ranged retreat, so Ajahn Brahm will be coming, but we do have invited. We invite other guests, speaker from outside to give the talk. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he will be the one who most likely give the talk.
Yeah, if let's say he's in the level.
And it's available on the thing, right? The website thingy. I can check.
Yeah, BSWA.
Yeah, BSWA.
And then on the 27th of October, I think it will be next the Sunday afterwards, it will be a Katina, which is the end of the arranged retreat. I'll be going. Right now I have a car.